Blog Talk Radio.
Ryan.
Hey, 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 it's Celeste. That's my five words
what
for the night. Have a good night, everyone.
Hey, 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 hey. It's Celeste and Ryan in the evening, coming at you straight from Freaksville. It's awesome, 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 awesome.
Like the special effects I use, the echo effect there?
Yeah, awesome, I like regular. The echo effect.
It's Ryan at CC in the morning on Q95.
We could do that. We could be online. We could do radio hosts and just play music. We'll just play music we like, though, and not, like, worry about what anybody else wants to listen to. If I want to listen to rap, polka, accordion music fusion, I'll listen to it, damn it. Shit.
Like, this is a good song. They're like, you're like a country station. I don't care.
I don't care. Exactly. Exactly. If I want to listen to a fucking Stevie Wonder / I don't know, fucking Metallica mashup. Actually, that might actually be pretty good. That might be something that needs to happen. So yeah, I was bored earlier tonight. Well, just a few minutes ago, and I'm like, I just took a picture of myself. And I do a unicorn shit, and I'm like,
so
I know people are gonna start saying it's a dick, but I'm like, it was that. How does it look like a dick? It's got stripes on it, everything. It doesn't look like a dick.
Okay, Ryan.
Looks like a carrot more than coming out of my head than a dick. I should have put like drip drops coming out of it if I was gonna do that.
The only reason
anybody said that is because, yeah, but that's the only reason only people will say it because I said it first.
Well, why say it first if you don't want people to think it?
I'll try to nip it in the bud, to be honest with you. I'm just going to delete the damn thing because I don't want people to think I have a dildo coming out of my head. And it's not a dildo, it's a fucking horn. I'm magical, damn it.
As magical as a leprechaun.
Heck yeah, shit. Magical is a leprechaun. Well, I guess that's true. I'm magical as a fairy.
Magical
is anything else. I am magically delicious. And if you squeeze my horn the right way, you will taste the rainbow of fruit flavors. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But, like, yeah. So, obviously, I was too bored. Because people think I have a dildo on top of my head. Which, if
okay,
I
okay, we all know that's your dream is to have that surgically added.
If I did have a dildo on top of my head, I would be one popular guy. Tell you what, that is for sure. Of course, you know, I'd be in a freak show, but you know, I'm already freaked to begin with. Might as well have fun.
There you go.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But no. I mean, I've looked into it. There's no surgery to have a dildo attached to your head. Too much money. I don't have extra cash lying around. If I did, you know, I might look into it. But that's like the ultimate plastic surgery right there. I know. I'm sure there's somebody out there who would do that to make them into a real unicorn or some shit. They would get like some kind of plastic thing that's mounted to their head, so they'll be a real unicorn. They had some guy. Wasn't there a guy that
has.
Probably, but you would have heard about it by now. He would have been on some TV show, like the guy who made himself into a cat. You know,
or the guy who made himself a. Lizard.
Exactly. You know, if there's someone out there, probably. I mean, it's cool for a while, but I wouldn't want to live as a fucking lizard, you know, or go out. I mean, I guess you make money on appearances and going on TV shows and, I don't know, speaking maybe, but I don't know what you would talk about. Hey, I'm a lizard.
Yeah.
What's up? I mean, does he eat bugs? Does he eat like a human food, or does he eat lizard food? I mean, when he goes does he go grocery shopping at the pet store? You know, does he buy you know, crickets and shit to eat? I don't know. Does he embrace the lizard lifestyle, or is it just a show?
Huh.
You know, if I come to his house and he's eating, exactly, you don't know. You know, I mean, like, the guy who turns himself into a cat, does he lick, like, milk out of a bowl? You know, does he use a litter box? I hope he doesn't, because it's kind of gross.
Yeah, it'd be really gross, like a human-sized litter box.
Yeah.
That'd be disturbing.
Imagine coming to his house to visit, you know, and you walk around and you find his litter box, and it hasn't been changed yet. And you get there, this bunch of human-sized feces in the fucking litter box. Or if you walk in, he's using it or something like that. And you're like, oh, shit, sorry. And he hisses at you because he can't yell at you because he's a cat, so he has to hiss at you.
I would just,
you know?
Like, turn around and walk away. It's like, all right, man, you do you.
Yeah,
I'm going to do me.
I would,
way on the other side of town.
Yeah. Yeah. You stay there. You know, I'll hear. I'll throw a ball of yarn and distract him, and I'll make my escape out the door because cats love yarn. I wonder if I got a laser pointer and started pointing at the floor, people run around chasing after it like what cats do.
That'd be hilarious. Like, all right, over there. Oh, you ended up in the kennel.
Oh, where'd he go? Where'd he go? Oh, he's gone. Uh-oh. Where'd it go? I think we should. These are things that need to be answered. We need to find him and go take him a visit and bring a laser pointer and a ball of yarn and say, here,
how
go
about
at it.
You go visit him and you tell me about it.
Well, it's no fun to go by yourself because then I'll have a need to corroborate my story. You've got to be with me so you can, you know, say, yeah, that's what exactly what it is. It's exactly what happened. Plus, it's scary. I don't want to
corroborate it from outside.
Huh?
Yeah.
You're making like no sense. What did Jesus say?
I said I can corroborate it from outside. Man, he came running.
Yeah.
It seemed freaky.
In the car with binoculars. You're doing good, Ryan, on walkie talkies and shit. Yeah. I mean,
exactly.
I hate you. You come in here right now.
Nope, I'm comfy right here.
Yeah, and they're out there eating donuts, like a stakeout or some shit. You've got police experience. You mean you'd be out there? We should do a stakeout together.
I'll only do a stakeout if it actually involves steak.
Yeah, exactly. Like, where's the steak?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that should be a new, like, thing for stakeouts. It has to involve steak.
Well, duh. I mean, people are like, oh, they eat donuts the entire time. No, it's called a stakeout for a reason. I mean, what do you think they're eating? They're probably eating steak and potatoes and shrimp. I mean, come on.
And that's not to knock the donuts, though. I mean, donuts are very good. But...
yeah, it's not Krispy Kreme.
I love Krispy Kreme.
I like Krispy Kreme. They're gross.
What's your favorite kind of donut?
Dunkin' Donuts donut.
Oh, those are good, too. I mean, I love any kind of donut. I like the Entenmann's that you buy at the fucking the store. Put like, the cinnamon sugar one in the microwave. Oh, my God, it's so
good.
Oh, yeah. Especially with a glass of apple cider. Man, that's heavenly right there. Plain, they're okay. If I can put some stuff on them, like cinnamon sugar or something, I'll put them in the microwave and eat those too. I don't
my
like
favorite, the Boston cream.
See, I was gonna say I do not like the Boston cream donuts. It's like I'm eating like a donut full of cum. It's gross.
Why do you think women like it?
Shit. I mean, I'm sure some men do, but I don't. I don't like anything with cream filling unless it's, you know, coming from me. Oh,
there's a.
I don't like Twinkies though.
There's a donut
like
shop
Twinkies
here in town.
Mm-hmm.
Called Kim's Donut, and they have
Kim's
this donut
donuts?
That. Yeah, Kim's Donut. Mm. And they have this donut that is just like a Boston cream, except for it's filled with, like, vanilla cake icing, and it is absolutely the best
See
donut
that?
I've ever had.
That sounds actually very. That sounds incredible. It's just when you get a donut and it's not marked, and you're expecting a nice shot of raspberry jelly to go in your mouth, and you get that nasty cream, and you're like, "Oh my God!" And it's just like washing your tongue out with soap and getting it, you know.
Yeah, I'm the opposite. When I bite into it and I'm expecting the cream and then I get the fruit, it kind of throws me off. I mean, I love the raspberry, but when it comes to like the lemon filled ones and
oh
then you
God,
go and you bite into it, you're like, oh
yeah.
My goodness, no.
No, lemon is bad. Lemon is bad, 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 bad. My dad loves lemon, so he'd get a bunch of lemon filled donuts when he buys a dozen donuts from Dunkin' Donuts, and I'm like, oh right, I getting a jelly donut and you bite into it, and it's lemon, and it tastes like cleaner lemon to your mouth.
Yes, exactly.
It's wrong on so many levels, you know, and you just kind of and you wonder what you did wrong in your life to have that happen to you.
Yeah.
The troubles and tribulations of donut eating. It's tough. It's like roulette sometimes. You don't know what you're going to get, you know?
Yeah. Like a box of chocolate.
Life is like a box of donuts.
You can look at that map so many times to figure out which chocolate you want. You never end up with the right chocolate.
Exactly. Exactly. You get those Russell Stover things and you end up with like a bunch of fucking coconut in your mouth.
Yeah, that's so gross. I've done that, and I don't like coconut. I'm not a coconut fan. When you bite in, you're like, well, my chocolate is done.
It's ruined. It's ruined. You know, and you're afraid. You're scared. You're tripping. You've got trepidations. You don't know if you can trust your instincts, because you don't know what you can bite into next. You don't know.
Exactly.
It's like when you get some of these brownies, and you're like, oh, fuck yeah, I got brownies, and you bite into it, and there's a big fucking walnut in the middle of it. Why?
Exactly.
Why do people do
that?
Why
do they
put nuts in brownies? Yes. What's the point? What is the point? It's like thinking of a chocolate chip cookie, and you bite it into an oatmeal raisin.
Oh, no. The only way I like oatmeal in general is the... You know the oatmeal cream pies?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Oh, those are the best.
Those are good.
Those are the only way I like oatmeal.
I like oatmeal. I'll eat Quaker oatmeal. I'll eat that with a bunch of butter on it. Like, if I get, like, a maple brown sugar, I'll put a bunch of butter on it, put a bunch of brown sugar on it, pretty much turning into a dessert, pretty much. And, I can choke it up. I mean, I like oatmeal. I like oatmeal cookie form. They should be two separate things, not the same. Oh, yeah. I'll eat grits, but I doctor them up. I had butter and, you know, fucking brown sugar, maple syrup. I mean, I make them pretty much into candy. You know, I don't like plain grits.
It's butter and cheese for me.
Butter and cheese?
That's it. For grits.
You know what looks
oatmeal
gross?
Oatmeal, just you can have all these oatmeal.
Okay, well, I won't share my oatmeal with you. You know what looks gross is shrimp and grits. I went to a wedding, my cousin's wedding, out in North Carolina 2 years ago, and they had a kind of seafood buffet, themed to their dinner after the wedding and shit at the reception. I swear it looked like someone had thrown up shrimp and grits into the platter thing. It was disgusting. I'm like, who the fuck puked in the in the buffet and didn't say anything? I mean, it was that bad. Although that's just shrimp and grits. I mean, I don't know.
Did you try them though? They're really good.
No, I'm not gonna eat someone else's puke. I know that man's not really puke, but I mean, I just couldn't get over
it.
Plus, they look cold, like they've been sitting out for a while. And, you know, what else looks? Now that we're talking about food that looks like puke, Brunswick stew. If you get a bowl of Brunswick stew, which I don't know if they have that down in Florida, but up here they have a thing called Brunswick stew, and if you look at it, I swear it looks like someone puked in the bowl. If you get a chance, go to a store and buy some Brunswick stew and open it up, and you know, it just if you want to fake someone out like with fake throw up or whatever, you know, just throw a bowl of can of Brunswick stew on the ground, and it'll look like something threw up. If you want to fake you're calling sick or something, oh, just threw up, you get Brunswick stew on the ground.
Ooh, why would you send someone a picture of your throw up?
If you were calling out of work. Yeah, you call out of work and you bought the proof. There you go. would be my first choice. Gross. But if you have a really hardcore boss that needs proof and you don't like your boss that much, send him a picture of that. It's not real. It's fucking soup.
I know.
So it's not
that's
that
just
bad.
Weird.
Well, I'm not your boss. I don't know. I mean, you may have a hardcore boss. I'm just saying. I'm not asking you to take a picture of your shit and
hardcore,
cool. Hardcore
cool.
Hardcore cool. Hardcore cool. That should
yes.
be on a t-shirt.
I mean, she's giving me 2 weekends off so I can celebrate my 20th birthday. I mean, what boss does that?
I don't know, but apparently a hardcore cool boss does that. That's what I'm talking about.
Exactly.
Hardcore cool. You should be like a t-shirt with like a penguin on it. You should make it for her and said hardcore cool and give it to her as a birthday present sometime. Or like a polar bear with sunglasses on, giving a thumbs up. It says hardcore cool on the top of it. You should make that
for a polar bear with the leather jacket.
Yeah, exactly. With sunglasses on, and he's leaning against like a post or something, giving a thumbs up. I think that'd be awesome. I think she would really enjoy that.
Probably.
What do you think? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think we have our guests on the line, so I'm gonna go ahead and add her to the conversation about the hardcore cool t-shirt because I know that's exactly what she wants to talk about. Good evening.
Are we talking about
How
vomiting?
Are you? Oh yes, we're talking about sending pictures of our vomits to our bosses apparently.
Oh, wow. Well, you did mention grits, and I'm going to have to say, on the record, I'm a big fan of Southern food, grits included. So, you know.
Oh,
there
grits
go.
Are amazing.
Yeah,
well, I'm a grits,
I love,
like
especially
I'm
shrimp
up.
And grits is my favorite. Shrimp and grits. Yum.
See, Ryan thinks it looks like puke.
About that. It did look like pukes. It looked like someone puked in the fucking, I don't know, what are those things called on a buffet? Like a tray, I guess, or serving platter? Looked like someone had thrown up into the serving platter. Because I didn't know what they were, shrimp and grits. I didn't know what they were. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Sorry.
There you go.
Clearly do not have a Southern upbringing.
No,
apparently not. Because I'm like a cheater. I'm eating Quaker grits, you know, instant grits, you know. I ain't, you know, I guess those are like fake grits or something. I don't know.
Is it grits or is that oatmeal?
Well, Quaker makes grits and oatmeal. They're expanding their horizons into the breakfast, you know, landscape.
Oh, okay.
So,
I didn't realize that. I didn't realize I could buy Quaker oats, grits, and whatever. Yeah. Little did I know. I remember, if you ever watched the movie My Cousin Vinny, they actually solve a murder case, and Joe Pesci proves the case based on how long it takes to cook grits. So that's just like an interesting grits trivia.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, for me, it takes me 3 minutes in the microwave to cook grits.
Yeah, but I guess
not enough time to commit a murder.
It would take a little bit longer. Well,
yeah,
that,
I'm sure.
That movie's from like the 80s or 90s, so they probably didn't have the technology to make grits as quickly then.
I remember
that's
making
an advancement
oatmeal.
That we probably developed in the last 2 years. You know, we're living in an amazing time period.
Mankind has come so far. We can make grits in a microwave in 3 minutes.
Yeah.
God bless America.
It is pretty amazing. You know, God bless us, you know, for that. You know, well, it's awesome.
I remember making oatmeal.
Yeah, that's technology.
Exactly.
You know?
We used to have to boil water to make oatmeal. It's crazy.
Well, I love
now,
like, the rice that you can buy that you just make in a couple minutes, too. Like, all that stuff is, like, amazing because I don't really like to cook, so if I can't, you know, cook something in 15 minutes. You know.
I mean, I'm in love with instant
stuff on
rice
fire.
Yeah.
I mean, making rice already on it by itself is just it's like so complicated. But I got to you get instant rice aroni, just add water, put it in the microwave for 3 minutes, and you're done. You're like, everything
Quick
should be
rice
like this.
Is amazing. If you don't do like non-quick rice, like in a rice cooker or whatever, it's like you really have to plan out like your meal. You got to be like thinking like an hour in advance. Like, I think I'm going to eat rice, and then you got to be like, okay,
mm-hmm.
You know, then you have to make it. I don't, you know, I don't like that level of planning.
Oh, no, I like being spontaneous. You know,
yeah.
It's like if I don't want to like plan like days ahead if I want rice or not. You know, like just like put it out there right now. Oh, I feel like rice. Oh, I feel like mashed potatoes. Oh, okay. I'll put it in the microwave. Good. Boom.
Well, my favorite is delivery food. I just like to have my food delivered, and then I go downstairs and pick it up. That's that I like. That's nice.
Yeah, I like that too. Definitely
yeah,
tastes better than
that's
not
my favorite.
Anything.
So,
I live in
what's
myself
kind of
to
delivery?
Everybody. I don't know if everybody knows who I am. Can I just mention that on the
yes.
podcast real quick?
Yes.
Yes. Genoveva Rossi. I am a horror actress. I'm a writer for UK horror scene in the digital dead. I'm a horror actress with over 90 film credits since 2012 in the horror genre. Right from UK horror scene in the digital dead. I am also the director of Attack of the Killer Chickens, which is about to go to its 16th and 15th film festivals, Trauma Dance and Action on Film. And what else do? I paint, I write, sometimes I belly dance. I do a whole bunch of different things, but that's the stuff I'm the most known for. I'm also a professional tarot card reader, and I travel around the country doing that sort of thing as well. So that's me.
Well, I apologize for not giving you the proper introduction. I was just into the whole grits versus oatmeal thing that I got myself in, you know, I got myself into it, but I do apologize for that. I do appreciate you coming on the show and speaking with us tonight about your career and about the new movie. You guys are coming out Safe Place. I believe it's
Safe
called
Place, Nick Hunt's movie. Very excited about Safe Place. We're going to be shooting that in Orlando, Florida. We have an amazing cast. I was actually just in New York City a couple of weeks ago. I got to meet my husband in Safe Place, James Taylor.
Nice.
Very handsome, charming man. I can see why I married him. I mean, I can see why my character married him. Anyway, you know, I might
he's
marry
a lucky
him
man.
When we're done filming.
What?
Okay,
so this is
he's
such
a
small
man.
World.
Yeah,
because
he's a lucky
James
guy.
Taylor's one of my friends, too.
Oh, cool.
Super cool guy. Are you
well,
from
he's my
Florida?
Husband in a Safe Place, so I'm pretty excited about that. And we luckily he was visiting New York City a couple weeks ago, so we got to meet up, which we thought was a good idea, kind of help us get into our characters a little
mm-hmm.
bit and stuff. And I could definitely see why Nick cast us together, because I felt like we had really great chemistry and got along really well right off the bat. So I know he's going to be amazing to shoot with. I know he recently worked on King Lear. So that's great because James and I both do theater. I did a production a little while ago called Harlots and Heresy, where I played Delilah of Samson Delilah, the biblical Delilah. So I do some theater. I also did an Edgar Allan Poe readings and interpretations, both at the Nyack Village Theater in New York State. So we're going to be very well matched, I think, as actors in our scenes, both having film and theater experience. So it's going to be awesome. I'm really looking forward to it.
That's awesome.
How did you get involved in the movie, Safe Place?
Well, you know, it was interesting. I'm on Facebook, and Nick reached out to me and asked me if I wanted to play a part in the film. And I will be playing the part of Sarah Craven. And I'm kind of like I'm pregnant, actually, in the movie. I'm a mother. Kind of an interesting role for me, kind of a nice
mm-hmm.
dramatic kind of character role that I'm excited to play. And he reached out to me and offered me the role via social media based on, you know, my following, my reputation, my name, and the horror genre, you know, in the film genre.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Well, that's awesome.
Now,
yeah,
being
well, you
in
know,
the horror.
Nick put a lot of thought into casting the film, each and every role. You know, he really thought a lot about, I think, finding the perfect match for every part that he had. So I'm sure he put a lot of thought
mm-hmm.
into it up, you know, for weeks or whatever, or months before he reached out, you know. So that's really cool. It's really flattering,
yeah.
And I'm very thankful to Nick, you know. And I'm sure he did that for every cast member. So I do really feel like Safe Place is really, really well cast. Like, everybody totally fits the role super well, and everybody's very much on top of their game and really strong actors, you know, and a great script. So, bravo.
I believe you have a question, Celestial?
Yeah, in terms of just in horror in general, what got you into wanting to do the horror aspect versus like other genres?
That's a good question. Well, I guess it all started for me as a little kid.
being introduced to some of my favorite horror films, like The Pit and the Pendulum with Vincent Price, the Universal Studio Monsters. I have my mom and dad to thank for introducing me to a lot of horror movies. And then also with the passing of George Romero, I also think a lot about how I think the first horror movie I actually owned was Night of the Living Dead, and I did watch that over and over again. So that was a huge inspiration as well. And Romero was very much, you know, missed. I think he inspires me, you know, every moment. So I just was always so inspired by the horror genre, probably a bit more than most other genres. And then I kind of pursued that, you know, Vincent Price being probably my biggest inspiration as an actor. Also Ingrid Pitt, Barbara Steele, Christopher Lee. You know, it's just, it's such a creative and interesting genre. It's such a challenging genre. There are so many great actors and actresses in that genre. I do act outside of that, though. I do comedy. I do drama. I do improv, and I do theater. But I would say most of my film credits, probably maybe 60 out of 90, are horror movies. And I'm probably the most known for my horror movies, you know. But I love everything.
Yeah. I know I've heard a lot of actors say they prefer the theater over movies. Which one do you prefer, personally?
I love film the most, I think, because I just love how, how it has so many different lives. Like, we have the day I get the script and I run the lines, and then we have the day that I shoot it with the director and everybody, and then, you know, months later it goes to maybe film festivals or it gets released on DVD, and people can watch it over and over again for many years to come. So I just love the longevity of the film genre. Theater is beautiful because you have the energy of the audience and you get to be in this character for a couple hours each night, night after night, and that's really awesome. And to have that energy of the crowd, and every performance is different. But what I, you know, what I find disturbing is how fleeting the theater is. You know, it's like when it's over, you know. Film is just not ever over. You're always interconnected with everyone you shot the film with, forever. Like all of us working on Safe Place together, you know, we might look back in 50 years, maybe to be doing a Safe Place reunion where we're all screening the movie and hanging out together, you know? And that's film. It's just, it's immortal. It's beautiful.
Yeah. You can always come back to film.
Exactly. I mean, I love that about it.
They're different plays, but they're always different actors playing the parts as, you know, as for each run. So I can understand where you're coming from with that, you know, plus there's a chance if it works out, you guys can be making a Safe Place 2 and 3, you know?
Oh, exactly right. And that would be amazing too. Or that we could end up, you know, things go really well, maybe we'll all be at a convention in a few years doing a Safe Place reunion for the fans. You know, you just never know where film is going to take you, you know?
Yeah, go to the cons and have a Safe Place panel. You don't see many panels for Macbeth at Comic-Con.
Exactly, and I love that. Although, you know, the theater is a lot of fun in its own right, and I do enjoy doing theater productions. Like, I really enjoyed doing Harlots and Heresy a while back. It was, like, a biblical play. I got to play, like, a different kind of character, a biblical character, one of the villainesses of the Bible. We had a nice theater run. It was really exciting and interesting and different for me. And then for Halloween, I did Edgar Allan Poe readings and interpretations, where I read some of Edgar Allan Poe's works that really touched my life the most. And that kind of brought out the horror genre and my love of it into the theater. But, you know, it's fleeting, because when it's over, you know, and it's not something that you necessarily carry with you. You know, you affect that audience. Maybe there's a couple hundred people there, but it's not like the thousands or millions of people that may end up seeing your films, you know?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, a lot of actors, they go back to Broadway and they do plays, but they always end up back in the movies. They don't stay there. They go there just to do something different, but they always end up back in Hollywood. And most of the actors on Broadway probably want to be in Hollywood movies.
Oh, absolutely. And I think there's nothing wrong with an actor mixing it up, because that helps you to evolve. You know, to do some theater, to do some film. And then for me, too, I think directing only makes you a better actor, to feel like what it's like to be on both sides of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being a director who acts will make you a better director. Being an actor who's directed will make you a better actor, because you understand both sides of filmmaking at that point, and that helps you to evolve as well. All these things you can do, I think, that make you a better actor, you know, doing the theater, you know, doing film, doing some television, directing, writing, you know, just kind of stepping out of your comfort zone, you know, taking roles maybe that you never thought you'd be able to play. That's how you grow, you know, as an actor. That's how you evolve.
Absolutely. Now, did you start as a theater actress, or did you start in the movies?
That's a good question. I would say my first theater production was in nursery school. I played a ladybug in that one. I don't know if I had a tremendous amount of dialogue. And I did some plays in grammar school and high school. And then when I ended up in college, that's when I first started doing some short films. And then after college, I segued into doing features and horror films, with I Spill Your Guts and Jacko Slasher being my first films.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, it was a very short period of time, I end up accumulating a lot of film credits and stuff. You know, and I think people underappreciate how skilled horror actors are. Like, I feel like I'm a pretty skilled actor. I feel like Vincent Price was certainly on the top of his game. I feel like Bill Oberst Jr. is phenomenal. Barbara Steele. There are so many people in the horror genre that are amazing actors, you know. And Vincent Price had this quote. He said, "The challenge of acting in horror is to act realistically in the most unrealistic of circumstances." Because your performance, you have to remember, has to seem real to the audience. But you might be in a film where, like, your whole family has been eaten by zombies, and there's not really anything most likely you can take from your life to bring into that scene. But it has to be real for you. Otherwise, it's not going to be real for the audience. And that is really challenging, and I think a lot of times in the horror genre, we're underappreciated for what we actually do.
Yeah, exactly. You have to bring the audience in and make them feel what you're feeling at the time. You know, and it's hard to do.
Exactly.
It's hard to make people laugh, and it's probably hard to make people feel that type of fear that you want them to feel to establish that emotion. It's got to be a difficult task.
Exactly, because the emotion probably should be real in the film. You have to take it from somewhere, and that can be a challenge when you're in a film and maybe you're running from a werewolf or a vampire or a zombie, or you're in some kind of crazy, unrealistic circumstance that's not really like your normal life. Because when you do drama, you know, maybe you have a scene where you're like, your husband cheats on you, or you get into an argument with one of your friends, and you can kind of easily take that from your life, you know? But when you're in a horror movie, you can't always do that. So you have to take it from somewhere, you know, and make it real.
Yeah, it's easy to get a jump scare out of someone. You know, just add music, make it dark, you know, and just make it very tense, and then jump out at someone. That'll scare you. But to bring someone in and, like, have them be really scared, like, they don't know what's going to happen next, and not have to rely on jump scares, that's the key.
Well, and to have people really believe that you're this frightening character, or really believe that you're this vulnerable, victimized character, you know, to really sell that to the audience, because that's what you do as an actor. You're really selling your character, and you're selling the movie, you know? And that's,
I think, a
challenging thing in horror, you know? Not everybody can do it.
What advice would you give someone who wants to get to that level that you're at right now?
Well, I would say, and I know a lot of actors will say the same thing. I think acting is not a profession for everyone. Michael Caine said it best: actors have to be made of steel. Like, it is going to be 100 times harder than you ever thought it was going to be an actor. You're going to have people telling you you're ugly, you're fat, you're too tall, you're too short, you're too pretty, you're too this, you're too that. You're going to be going on auditions and rejected more often than you're going to not be rejected. You're going to have a lot of criticism, maybe negative reviews. You know, not everybody's going to like everything you do, because you know what? All art is subjective, you know, and everything is subjective, really. You know, and things like that. And you have to be the kind of person that's going to persevere no matter what, that can take that, and it's going to roll off of you, and you're just going to keep on moving forward no matter what, and honing your skills and working and working and working and dealing with this rejection and not taking things personally. And most people, they say most actors give up after a year or two. And I say, like, when I started out acting, so many people I knew then no longer act now. You know, they're doing something else. Because it's, you really have to have a certain kind of personality, you know, to pick up and go to New York City, L.A., or wherever, and decide to become an actor. You know, you're going to have lean months, you know, and you're going to have, you know, some months where you're eating steak and other months where you're eating tuna fish or peanut butter and jelly. Sometimes you're going to be wondering in the beginning, am I going to be able to pay my rent this month? You know, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for the faint of heart. So I think unless you're really a resilient, determined person, I would say don't do it. You know, I would say don't do it. Don't move to L.A. Don't move to New York City unless you're ready to suffer for your art. You know, when Frank Sinatra said, you know, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. He meant because New York City is the hardest place to succeed probably in the country, if not the world, you know. And it takes a certain kind of person, you know, and not everybody is like that. And not everybody even needs to be that kind of person. You know, it doesn't make anybody better than anyone else. We all have different paths in life. So you have to see if this path is one that fits you. And maybe you have to do some soul searching on that, you know?
And
you know, it's not as glamorous as everybody thinks it's going to be. It's a lot of hard work being an actor. And also being a director.
Because there are lots of people out there wanting the same thing you want. So you've really got to, it's really cutthroat, you know, because there are a lot of people have the same dreams that you have.
You want, but what's going to make you successful is that you have to work harder, you have to be better, and you have to want it more, you know? And that's success, you know, and most people don't have that. You have to be like, have a real, you know, fighting instinct. You know, you have to be the kind of person that picks yourself up and keeps moving no matter what. You know, when they have that, you know, that saying, the show must go on, you know, that's not, you know, a lie. That's what this is all about. No matter what happens in our lives, we keep shooting. You know, we still do the play. We still do the film. Things keep going. If you're not that kind of person, then you probably can't be an actor. You know? Not to scare anybody, but I just want to, everybody needs to be realistic, I guess, when they're entering at the profession, because you see the people on TV, they're on the red carpet, and you see the glamorous side of it, but you don't see all the suffering, you don't see all the pain, you don't see the rejection that people face and trying to persevere and pursue these goals. Because, like you said, you know, you're going after something that everybody wants. Everybody wants to be an actor. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Very competitive. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
you
tough.
Said that,
it's a tough world.
You said that you learned a lot from switching roles from being a director, from being an actor to a director. What are some of the things you learned when you started directing?
When I went from an actress, I had done in you know, like 90 movies or something like that, and then I switched to directing. You know, you see, you know, the wise person, you know, a smart person learns from their own mistakes, but a wise person learns from the mistakes of others. So when you're on sets, you might not always agree with what the directors are doing, and you might see them make mistakes, and then you kind of like store it away in the back of your brain and try to bring that into your life when you start directing. I'm sure Clint Eastwood did that when he started directing as well, because he had done so many films beforehand, and he's such a phenomenal director. He probably learned so much as an actor just being observant on set. And then when you become the director, then it gives you kind of like an appreciation for, like, you know, time, budget, casting, you know, all the details and nuances that you don't really deal with when you're an actor. Because a lot of times when you're an actor, you show up with your dialogue, you're there for like a few days, and then you go home and move on to your next film. But when you're a director, you're like married to that film for months. You have pre-production casting, then you have production shooting, long days, every day you're working as a director. And then you have post-production where you're meeting with the editor, you're thinking about the music that you're setting with, maybe you're submitting to film festivals, attending film festivals, and it's also a very different world too, because when you're an actor, you're kind of promoting yourself as a product. When you're a director, you're promoting your films as the product. It's, you know, it's a very different mindset. It's a very different kind of shifting of gears. Not everybody can go from one to the other, because it's usually kind of different personality types are sometimes actors versus directors, you know? Not everybody has a personality type that lends easily to both mediums. You know, obviously Clint Eastwood is my favorite actor turned director, because, you know, he's phenomenal. I think he's almost a better director than he was an actor, which is saying something, you know?
Well, yeah, I think for Clint Eastwood, he as an actor, you knew what kind of movie you were going to get pretty much with the Clint Eastwood movie. Even like Bridges of Madison County, you got Clint Eastwood as Clint Eastwood. It was hard for me. It was hard to buy him as the romantic lead with Meryl Streep, because I just saw him as Clint Eastwood. Yeah, without the cowboy hat.
He's a little typecast.
Or Dirty Harry.
Which happens as an actor.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it even
it's
happens
like
as
John
director.
Wayne.
You get a typecast.
Yeah.
You know, look at somebody like George Romero. He had a wonderful career, but he was, I guess, a little typecast as director for certain genre films that he did very well in. And a lot of us actors, it's like, you know, Vincent Price or what have you, myself, you kind of get a little typecast in a certain genre, and people don't realize that you're more than capable of working in so many other genres too, you know, but people, you know, have perceptions, you know.
Well, I mean, look at Robert Downey Jr. for as a more recent example. Now, whenever he's in a movie, people see him as Iron Man, because he's been that role for 10 years now. He's been in other things.
Man, does he make a fine Iron Man.
He's a good Iron Man. But that's what people see him. Or Daniel Radcliffe, people always see him as Harry Potter.
Well, he's tried very hard.
That was his role for so long.
On Instagram, because he's so cute. I find him very cute. And he's so little. I like him. He's adorable. But he's tried really hard to take edgy roles to kind of break out of the whole, like, Harry Potter kind of stigma. And things like that, by taking things that are a little, like, I know he was in a movie called Horns. That was kind of a horror movie. He did some other stuff. You know, he's an interesting guy, but I guess he's got to do some things that are a little radical to kind of break out of that. Yeah. Yeah.
But hey, that stigma
I think
made him a lot of money.
Well, it made him a lot of money, so there's nothing wrong with that. And then he'll make more money, more money down the road.
And it gives him a chance to do those more edgier roles, because he can afford it, you know?
Well, yeah, and for him doing the edgier roles shows range and helps him break out of that child character that he became so famous for. I definitely like him as an actor, and I think he has a lot of potential for a full career. I don't think he's going to be one of those people that was just a child actor that doesn't move on to bigger and better things. I think we're going to see more and more edgy and interesting roles for him as he gets older and evolves. You know, I think he is actually a really strong actor. Absolutely.
Yeah, as time goes by.
I like him.
He won't be just known as Harry Potter. Because if he had years to it, then people will see more of his acting chops, and Harry Potter will just be one part of his career, not his whole career that people look at him like right now, you know?
Exactly. It's still fresh in people's minds. When we look back in 20 years, I'm sure he'll have an acting resume that's quite diverse. You know, I guarantee that, you know? But yeah, sometimes you get a little typecast. You know, and sometimes typecasting is not necessarily bad. You know, certain people in the horror genre, like Vincent Price, was a little typecast, but that kept them working.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Cushing was very typecast. You know, how many times did he play Van Helsing, you know, in a movie, you know?
True.
But you know what? That worked out very well for both of them. If you don't mind your typecasting and you like playing those types of roles, and they're the kind of roles that you can grow with and evolve with, and, you know, and play at different age brackets, there's nothing wrong with that, you know. Some people fight typecasting. Some people love typecasting.
You've got to go with what the audience wants, too. I mean, look at, like, see Adam Sandler. He tried doing serious movies like Punch Drunk Love or Spanglish, and they weren't as popular as his comedies because people don't see him as a serious actor.
You know what? Because you're an entertainer at the end of the day, and you want to make the audience happy. So I know Vincent Price, Peter Cushing, myself, I'm sure Barbara Steele, a lot of people that are well-known in the genre, Bill Oberst Jr. You know, a lot of us, when we're selecting our roles, are thinking about, you know, what kind of roles and what kind of films do our fans and horror fans and the audience want to see us in. And those are the ones oftentimes you're more likely to take. You know, if you have a couple films, you're not sure which one you're going to be able to do because of scheduling conflicts, go with what you think people would like to see you in the most.
Right? Exactly.
Because you're an entertainer. You're there to entertain people.
The only way for you to make money is for people that people actually go see your movies. And if you're making movies that nobody wants to see, it's like, well, maybe I should change my way of thinking a little bit. You know?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I know Peter Cushing, who I'm a big fan of, he said in interviews that he would pick roles and films a lot based on what he thought the fans wanted to see him in. And there's nothing wrong with, like, you know, gearing your whole career to that. Because, you know, he was on top of the world for probably at least 20 years of his acting career, doing horror movies and doing all these exciting things with top names. And he had a very, you know, lucrative career, and he was very busy. And so he doing films that people wanted to see him in. Nothing wrong with that.
Well,
you know?
Nothing wrong with that, especially if you're going into Hollywood to make money. You know,
that's the thing you have to think about. Like, we're artists to a certain degree, but more than artists, we are entertainers as actors. You know, it's not about you. It's about you, you know, putting yourself out there and making people happy. You know, like, not all artists are these starving artists that just make art for art's sake. Like, let's think about somebody like William Shakespeare. You know, he wrote plays that people wanted to see, and he made a lot of money. There's nothing wrong with that. And his plays still hold up today. But they were commercially viable, and they were well received and well marketed at the time. You know, there's nothing wrong with actually making money and being successful at your art. you know?
Well, I mean, I can see, like, you know, painting a picture. That seems to me to be more coming from the artist's, I guess, soul, because it's coming from the paintbrush to the tapestry. But he's still putting it out there for people to enjoy. So he wants people to like it.
Oh,
you're
exactly.
Yourself
a lot
out
of these
there
painters,
for people to
like
enjoy.
Van Gogh and Picasso.
Like, yeah.
You know, they were successful people in their own right. Like, people were paying them to paint things. You know, they were.
Exactly.
So everybody always has this idea that we have to completely, you know, just do art for art's sake. But not necessarily. You can also be doing art just for people to enjoy and to make people happy and
people are
going to pay to see. You know, too, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's a lot of hardship in the world. People need an escape, and that's where film and art comes, you know, into play, you know, right? It's an escape from maybe our reality. Horror is very much an escape from our reality. You know, life can be horrific, but horror movies take us to this dark fantasy world, you know?
Yeah.
That's very far removed from our own lives.
It can be an escape, for sure. People need that sometimes. People need to be scared. People need to feel the adrenaline of not knowing what's going to happen next to lift them out of their mundane lives. You know, you take them on a journey, and then when the movie's over,
going on a roller coaster,
they end up
do we go on the roller coaster? Because we want that adrenaline rush. There must be something in our minds that just wants to be frightened. That just wants to kind of let go and kind of just not have control for a moment and go on this fantastic ride, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And when the movie's over, you're in a safe place. You're back home.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
That's
a
safe
place.
It's an interesting title, safe place, actually, for film. Yeah.
Throw that in there. Well, we're almost done with our interview. here, unfortunately. But
oh,
dang. I was going to give you.
Well, I want to say to everybody, check me out online, Genoveva Rossi, Genoveva Rossi, Rossi. If you Google me, you'll get my website, you'll get my IMDb. Check out my films, check out my Facebook, my Twitter, my Instagram. Follow me and everything that I'm up to, because, hey, why not? And I appreciate everybody's support. Thank you for having me on the show. And I, you know, everything I do, I certainly do for the horror fans. And I'm very thankful for all their support and love. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. And I'll put all your links on my Facebook page so people can follow you. And I can't wait to have you back on the show to talk about Safe Place after it comes out.
Yeah, I can't wait, too. I'm really anxious to get going with it and working with everybody. You know, I can't wait. I wish we were doing it today. Okay? Thank you so much.
I can't wait for it to come out. Thank you so much.
Exactly.
Have a great night.
You too.
Have a great night.
Thank you. Take care. Have a great night. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right, bye. Well, that was awesome.
Definitely.
Great. That was a great interview. And you actually spoke. I was so impressed.
I know. I've said more than 5 words. I lied to everyone.
I know, right? Baby steps. Baby steps. You're going to make it. I'll make you to a co-host yet, baby. Woo! Next week, we are on for 2 hours.
Yes. Wait, what?
2 hours of freakiness. Well, get this. We have, okay, this is an easy show. We're doing a show about Henricus Park to go along with the investigation we have out there on August 19th. We have Dennis on the show and John Pagano, the Henricus Dorian. So I don't even think we're even going to have to talk, to be honest with you.
No, not.
I mean, I just sit back, relax, and let them go at it.
It's my type of show. I don't have to talk.
Exactly. Exactly. I know a lot of people are interested in Henricus Park, and we're going to have 2 hours of nothing but talk about history and some of the paranormal happenings that have been recorded at the park. I'm going to get Dennis to send me some of his EVPs so we can put them in the studio so we can play them next week. You're not going to miss this at all. It's going to be awesome, guys. So be sure and tune in next week.
In November, y'all better take me there.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. Definitely. We're gonna do that, you know. We've got you coming to St. Albans, so that's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have some fun when you come up here in November. Don't you worry. Don't you worry about that.
But, well, I ain't worried.
No, you ain't worried. You ain't no reason to worry about that shit. These next 2 shows are going to be awesome. We have Supernatural News after the Hit Rikus show. So, I mean, yeah. We've got some pretty good shows coming up, guys.
Man, I have to learn more about Supernatural, the TV show.
Yes, you got to learn more about. I know. You got to learn about Dean's underwear size or some shit. I don't know. What kind of floss he uses.
I'm a Dean girl, but Sam curious, so.
You're a Dean girl, but what?
Sam curious.
You're curious about Sam? I have no idea what you just said. But it's all good because we're freaks here, and I'm having bad hearing apparently. But
apparently.
We are about
We have
done.
1 minute. We have 60 seconds left.
60 seconds of freakiness left. So you go on being
dear,
Sam curious,
what are we
whatever
do?
The fuck that means. I don't know. I'm so much pressure.
I don't know. We got 60 seconds, guys. We got to make this cool.
We got to make it cool. Shut up, man. We got to be cool. Follow us on Twitter.
That's cool, guys.
Let's Get a Freaky Ken. That's what we never talk about a Twitter account. We have a Twitter account. Follow us on Twitter at Let's Get a Freaky Ken. Like us on Facebook. Keep figuring out some paranormal show. And I think that's about it. So, everyone have a great night.
And that's cool.
Stay freaky. We are awesome. We are super cool. And we will talk to you next week. Have a good night.